Canadian Comic Book Creator Awards.
The second annual. We're not going to call it the Joe Shuster Awards one year later.
Manure smell to the room, and it's actually luckily animal manure. We are delighted to introduce two people without whom these awards really would not happen.
In fact, I really weep for pop culture in general had these two gentlemen not come along.
No, exactly. These two are icons. They're much beloved and infamous all over. One is a columnist for the Toronto Star. He's also host of Salem's Lot on Driving Classics. He's a bon vivant, a philanthropist, a scholar, a man about town, choreographer, cultural icon, a lip thrower, inventor, pioneer in the struggle for equal rights for transvestite animals, and member of the Hair Club for Men, president of the Hair Club for Men, and head of human resources for the Hair Club for Men. Ladies and gentlemen, a round of warm welcome for Rob Salem. Yeah.
Thank you so much, this is Rick. No, you know Rick, of course, from the Frantics, coming soon to a theater near you.
Yeah.
Back together again, will you guys never grow up?
Nope, never.
Not to be confused with Red Green, a show which he also had something to do with. And History Bites, which I have got on record as saying is the funniest show on television.
Yeah.
And I stick by it. And we are happy to be here once again. And to be referred to in the program as the dynamic duo, which
yes,
is
exactly.
Quite cool.
Yeah, because it's actually about 4.5 people, but that's the good news. We are delighted to be here. Of course, my cachet with all of you is, for some of you who remember, is Prisoners of Gravity on TV Ontario. Call Space Game to rerun it would be my advice. We're delighted to be here. We're going to have a great deal of fun. We've got some legendary people in the room. We're going to be honoring these legends, and you'll be here to say, I was there for the first year. Now, how many people were actually here at last year's awards? Give us a round of applause. So, if you keep this up, you can say I've been to them all. In fact, last year you could have said that just being there once. All right. And I think we're going to start.
Why not?
All right.
I'm sick of talking about us.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to begin with the founder and the chief coordinator of the Joe Shuster Canadian Comic Book Creator Awards. Without him, we wouldn't be here, this wouldn't be happening, these plaques wouldn't be happening, and all these people wouldn't be honored. So, pretty cool what he's done. And it's cool how many people have jumped on board and supported him. So it's very exciting. He is a comic book writer, he's a former publisher of comic books, until Reverend Kenda caught on, and, no, that's not true. Would you welcome, please, the ever-delightful James Whaley.
Yes, well, welcome to the dawning of JSA Year 2. No, not that JSA. The Joe Shuster Awards Year 2. Now, for any of you in the audience that attended the awards last year, I've been reminded on a number of occasions by my colleagues to keep my speech this time brief. I can take it in. Last year, we opened ourselves to a lot of good-natured ridicule and criticism when we mistakenly labeled our 2005 awards event the first annual Canadian Comic Book Creator Awards, as we were constantly reminded that it was a bit of a misnomer to call something first and annual when we only had one ceremony under our belts. Well, call me overconfident or foolhardy, but I, for one, never doubted that we'd started something important and vital in the Canadian comic book community, and here we are a year later, and let me tell you, we're here for the long run. Now the first year's event certainly didn't come off without a hitch. Remember, no AC, okay? But despite any glitches, it was truly an evening of lasting memories. Joe Shuster's sister, Jean Shuster Peavy, and her daughter, Dawn, making a last-minute decision to attend this show, and along with the other Shuster family members, their kindness and presence really launched that inaugural ceremony. Jerry Robinson's keynote address and his personal reminiscences of Joe lent a historical element to the event that couldn't be denied. Rick Green and Rob Salem's clever and professional handling of the MC duties put the crowd at ease and kept the ceremony moving along in an air of keen comic book knowledge and sharp comic timing. Not to mention our many and varied presenters, particularly Ed the Sock and Leanna Kay, who lightened the proceedings with their quick wit and sharp banter. And of course, the many award recipients who were truly touched and moved by the recognition bestowed on them by their fans and peers. All this and more is forever seared into my memory in the afterglow of that day in April in 2005. Now, we've come a long way in the last year. A few missteps, of course, and a couple two steps forward, one step back, but hey, we're new at this. Thanks to everyone that worked so hard to make this event happen again, and to all our sponsors, new and old. Enjoy the evening as we honor and celebrate the immense comic book talent that this great country has to offer. Now, in closing, I want to dedicate this year's event to a new member of our awards family, Francisco Rosa of Montreal, a member of our nominating committee and an individual who opened our proceedings to the wonder and vastness of the comic book or BD community in La Belle Province. Francisco did his work on the committee far above and beyond the call of duty, and we wish him well with his recent health problems, and that his stay in the hospital will not only be brief, but will restore him to his former enthusiastic self. Also, I would like to dedicate this evening to my children, Mary and Josh, who's out there somewhere. May the future hold great promise and joy, and may you face the road ahead with your eyes wide open. And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce this evening's keynote speaker, a comic book writer from 1989 to 2001 who wrote for Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Viz, and many other publishers, and for series including Green Lantern, Justice League, El Diablo, Wonder Man, The Shadow, Pokemon, and The Batman. The author of Killing Monsters, Why Children Need Fantasy Superheroes and Make-Believe Violence, Honey, I'm Home, sitcom Selling the American Dream, and more recently, Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and The Birth of the Comic Book. Eisner Award winner, Gerard Jones.
I could probably use the timer too, but I'll do my best to keep it to the point. Thank you for having me. My first time in Toronto, and it is a gorgeous city, so thanks for getting me up here. It could be pretty easily argued that the most important single event in the comic book business as we know it, comic book medium as we know it, was the publication of Superman in 1938. It was from that the American comic book industry came. It was from that eventually that fandom as we know it came. It was from that the whole superhero business and all of its attendant franchising and global marketing came. And these things, like them or not, are still kind of the commercial and creative fuel for much of this world-spanning medium that we love so much. Hey, that's me. I remember that day. Canada's contribution to Superman was twofold, one creative and one commercial. Joe Shuster, of course, was the creative contribution. Joe's grandfather had left Russia for the Netherlands to escape the pogroms in the late 19th century, and then his sons, feeling as though they weren't making enough headway, there weren't enough opportunities in old Europe, came to Toronto, which was a booming industrial city at the turn of the century. And Joe's uncle did well in business. Joe's father did not. Joe's dad was tried to run a tailor shop in Toronto. It didn't work out. He went broke, so he ended up crossing the lake, going to Cleveland, where the Jewish community was doing particularly well at the moment. He still didn't do very well, but it turned out that after Joe moved to Cleveland, he was 10 years old when he left Toronto and went to Cleveland, Joe met Jerry Siegel. Joe met Jerry in high school. Jerry was a local Clevelander. Most of you probably know this story very well. And they came up with this idea of Superman, this peculiar creation that took sort of all the hero myths in popular culture, all the slapstick, all this material from movies and cartoons and comic strips, and distilled it down into one little primary colored pure concept, this distillation of fantasies of power and liberation and invincibility. And at first couldn't find a market for it. For years they were unable to place it, until finally in the late 1930s they found a fly-by-night publisher, actually at the time a printer, distributor, sort of publisher named Harry Donenfeld, who was just in the process of taking over a company called Detective Comics Incorporated. Now Harry was not Canadian, he had come straight from Romania to New York, but a lot of his capital, a lot of his money had a Canadian connection. Because in 1920, when Joe Shuster was 6 years old, still living in Toronto, the government of the United States felt that the way to clean up our society and make it a better and more genteel place was to make the sale of alcohol illegal. It was a great stroke for the Canadian economy, because immediately people realized that Americans were not going to give up this essential material. This was the lifeblood of most Americans. And an easy way to bring it into the country was down through Canada. So there was great business suddenly for like the Molson people right down the road, and Seagram's and some of the other industries here. And there was also the seed money then for some of the most inspiring success stories in American history. Al Capone, Meyer Lansky, Frank Costello. These people who went from the streets, from little rackets in the ghettos, to tremendous wealth and political influence in the course of a few years, thanks to Prohibition. One of the minor functionaries of the Frank Costello mob was Harry Donenfeld, who had been a garment salesman and a gambler, and just one of these guys who were knocking around the Lower East Side. Until, through various connections, he discovered his brothers ran a printing company. Harry did some sales for the printing company. It turned out that a printing company in New York was perfectly placed for moving bottles in from Canada, because they were already bringing paper in from Canada in tremendous quantities. And it was very easy to just keep this distribution network, what had been paper for the printing presses, and they still did the paper for the printing presses, but they also did whiskey and beer for the Frank Costello, Meyer Lansky, Lucky Luciano, Bugsy Siegel group, who were distributing heavily in New York. So Prohibition ended in 1934. All of a sudden, these people had to find other ways to make money and other places to put the money they'd accumulated. And it was in the mid-30s that Harry Donenfeld began to expand rapidly in publishing. His combination of the bootlegging and printing now became basically just printing. And in 37, he and his partners kind of accidentally moved into the comic book field. So there was this Canadian-derived capital, in a sense. And here at the same time was Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster sending their Superman ideas out and not finding a buyer. And placed Superman with the Donenfeld, not because of Harry's intervention, but because of a couple of teenage editors, Shelley Mayer and Vin Sullivan, who happened to be there. And from this strange combination of innocent teenage inventiveness and marginal business and slightly shady money came the American comic book business, and in some sense the global comic book business. And I am fascinated by this way that comics still unite what is innocent and full of life and full of creative commitment, and what's a little bit subversive and a little bit shady. And I think this is one of the things that keeps the business so vital. It will always flow back and forth. It's a great medium in that it is such a cheap medium, and it remains still a way that people can get their particular visions out. Joe Shuster, with his dreams of futuristic cities and bodybuilders and men in tights, and combined with Jerry Siegel's particular science fiction inventions, couldn't have made it in book illustration without some other way into the cultural firmament. He couldn't have made it in animated cartoons. It was, you know, he was a good draftsman, but the vision was peculiar. And comics have always been this place where these odd visions can find their way out of someone's imagination and into the world, because if nothing else, the startup cost is small and the fandom is there and the word of mouth is there. So I think being here, I can't speak well of Canada. I can't speak thoroughly of Canada, pardon me. I feel like a little bit of an interloper. And I was almost a Canadian by birth, actually. My dad used to work at Glacier Park in Montana, and my mom was 8 months pregnant once when they came up, and they had this choice between me being born in Cutbank, Montana, or Lethbridge, Alberta. And Lethbridge, they said, had a better hospital, because, you know, you have a better health system up here, but they thought it would be too complicated with the double, you know, my birth certificate being in foreign countries, so I stuck being a Montana native. But what I do see in the story of Joe Shuster, the story of comics, the story, well, I'll mention Dave Sim, if I may, someone who discovered that power of comics, that ability to just do your own work and do it on a shoestring and get it out there and build a following and create a significant success, a global success that changed the way the comic business runs. It's this thread that I think makes Joe still relevant. We know the stories of Joe having been screwed by his publishers, of Joe having been driven into poverty, and of the struggle late in his life by Joe and Jerry to get some compensation and some credit back. And that's a relevant story. It's a powerful story. But in some ways, I think what's most powerful is just the continuing reality that comics is a medium in which people can find ways to get their visions out there, and they can find ways to prosper, and bit by little bit, change the culture of the world. So thanks again.
Thank you.